everybody. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to share a little bit about my trip, but I'm not going to share a whole lot. At least I don't think I am. You know how that goes. Because next week, Sunday morning, week from now, I invited the team that I went to Texas with to come up and kind of share with you their experiences, and we're going to put together a slideshow for you guys, and so you can kind of see what we did and what's going on and a little bit more. But I'll share a little bit just to tide you over. So for those of you that don't know, I recently, it starts, I guess, with this. I made an announcement a few weeks ago that I recently took a part-time job with Global Response, which is Bethel's disaster relief organization that they've been building for about 5 years. And what that means kind of for us is that we're just kind of in a transitioning period for to kind of figure out what that means for Mountain Chapel. But it's basically 2 days a week, unless I'm employed, or unless I'm deployed, to a disaster like I was for about 10 days. So I'll be at Bethel 2 days a week working to, my official title is volunteer coordinator. So over the last 5 years, from what I understand, they've trained about 600 volunteers, which I just found out that Gio and Eva went through that training. So I'm finding out that how many people have gone through this training, but are kind of, for lack of a better word, not to say that Gio is scattered, but to say that they're kind of scattered. They get emails, but that's about all. And so we're going to try and, part of my job will be trying to connect all those people so they feel a little bit more plugged in, a little bit more part of a team, and more aware of what's going on and their opportunity to go and serve and deploy and things like that. So anyway, that's that. That's happening. And I'll keep telling you more and more as I find out more and more. But I was supposed to start on the 5th of this month, and then Hurricane Harvey happened. And so I got a phone call just about 4 days before we left, I think. I think we left on Wednesday, and I got the call on Friday and said, hey, can you go to Texas? And so anyway, yeah, we started just kind of getting ready for that. Didn't totally know what we were going to find when we got there. There was 10 of us that went. I didn't lead the trip. I was just along for the ride as one of the team members, a guy named Carl Ladd, who you guys will meet. You guys will meet the whole team next week. Anyway, he was our team leader and did an amazing job. And we first went to a place called Spring, which is north of Houston. We actually never went into Houston. Most of Houston was closed to what we were doing. We were not trained search and rescue, so that's not why we were going. We were there to serve and love on people. And so we went to First Spring, and there's a church there that we connected with that was doing a distribution center. So we helped them just get organized, and that's a really neat story. If you're on Facebook, and you get on Bethel Global Response's Facebook page and like their page, then you can go back and actually see a ton of videos and testimonies and pictures and all that stuff. And keep up. That's the best way to know what is going on and where I'm at if I'm gone and where they're at. There's still a team there. We actually traded off with another team that we met in San Antonio. They flew in as we were actually the night before we left, and we got to just connect with them and kind of pass the torch, so to speak. And they went back to Spring. Then we spent most of our time, about 7 days, I guess, in Rockport. And so Rockport is south of Houston. So normally you drive through Houston, but from Spring to Rockport is about a 2-hour drive or so. And it took us about 8.5 hours to get through. And because you'd be going and that road's closed and that road's flooded and that road. And so we just kind of had to wind our way through the Texas maze to get to where we're going. But Rockport was most hit. And you'll see this with pictures next week. They didn't get the flooding like Houston got, but they got the wind. So they got the highest wind hit there in Rockport. And it's a town of just about 15,000. So it's a pretty small town, a little beach town. It's on the Gulf there. And you could tell it was a cute town, and I'm sure it will be again. But it was pretty much completely decimated. There wasn't any buildings with zero damage, and a lot of buildings that were completely destroyed, and a lot of trees down and all that stuff. So we teamed up with a group called Operation Blessing, which is 700 Club, if you've ever heard of them. 700 Club, they have their outreach ministry, which is Operation Blessing. So they basically sign up volunteers, they give you a shirt, and they give you work orders, and you go out and you do whatever the work orders are. Most of the work orders were like cleanup stuff. So the wind basically ripped all the leaves off the trees, and so there's 6 inches deep of leaves everywhere, and then twisted these huge tall oak trees there where we were at, oak trees and palm trees. Most palm trees were tipped over. There wasn't very many standing anymore. And most oak trees were damaged. Some big, huge stuff and just branches and stuff everywhere. So we ran saws and we cleaned up people's yards and we carried out stuff out of their homes. And, a lot of the wind was amazing, like being able to see things that you wouldn't even think are possible by just wind. It's just like this amazing, powerful thing. That one, I'm sure we'll show you guys the picture next week, but there was a piece of roofing shingle, just like it's flexible roofing shingle, like it's on our house, that was embedded into a palm tree that, like, you couldn't pull it out. It was just stuck into this palm tree. And it's like, man, how does that happen that does that? And then there's, just all kinds of things like that. But trailers that, big fifth wheels and trailers that are just wheels up on top or just twisted and torn in half, and just all kinds of amazing things like that. But really what was quite amazing was watching. There's two kind of things that kind of stirred in, three, I'll say three things that kind of stirred and stirred people up. One of them was Texas. We're from Texas. There's Texas flags everywhere. Everybody, if you had anything to write on or spray paint on, that Texas Strong, you saw Texas Strong was everywhere. And so that was a huge, huge thing. There was a guy with this huge oak tree that was down across his driveway blocking everything. And he came out there and like tied and bungee corded a Texas flag onto it. And so the Texas Strong thing. The other thing was American, tons of American flags. People were just, we're America, we're going to be okay. And so that was just prevalent and kind of in there. And then the other thing was God. Like, people were, Texas is it's part of that Bible Belt thing. And so we ran into people that weren't believers. But for the most part, there was just tons of God bless and tons of thank yous and tons of generosity and encouragement and tons of bringing hope to people. There was a couple different places. And I think that the team is probably, that's probably what they'll share a lot of, is their experience with different people. But the generosity of people was probably the most amazing thing I've never experienced it at that level. And I know you guys experienced it a lot here. Where that just, it just stirred up, like, how generous people are, almost so that it's almost too much to handle. One of the days, we were about 5 days in, and we were at the Operation Blessing, incident command place. And we come back for lunch, because there's a place, there that they get all set up. All these different people have just kind of come in and set up, but one of the setups was called Mercy Chef. It's a ministry where basically these guys set up a kitchen trailer and they just cook meals for both victims and volunteer workers. And so we pretty much ate there every lunch and dinner. But anyway, this whole kind of setup is there. And this caravan of semi-trucks and gooseneck trailers and trucks and all kinds of stuff comes rolling up. And it's about probably, I don't know, it was longer than you could see. It went all the way down. We were like occupied basically the entire block. And it was like two blocks past us and went down and around the corner. So, tons and tons. And there were just pallets of water and clothes. And we were four or five days in, and nobody could take it. It was too much. There was like nowhere for it to go. Everybody was like, we can't take it. We have nowhere to put it. We have nowhere. And so you ended up, by the time we were going, and we were kind of watching the town come back to life, and the power company, there's power company people from everywhere, all different trucks from all over the place, all over Texas, and hundreds of pole trucks and linemen that were just, miles a day. They were, almost all the telephone poles were busted and down. And so they were, you can imagine hundreds and maybe thousands of telephone poles that had to be reset. And then, they would go through an entire neighborhood and reset all the poles in an entire neighborhood. And one day it was like, there was no telephone poles here yesterday. You're under lines and over lines and all this stuff. And anyway, that was amazing. But by the end of what we were leaving, we were just seeing, you would see in a parking lot somewhere in town, 10,000 cases of water just sitting there. Because it's like so, the generosity of people was just so amazing. And I've been going back and forth about if I'm going to preach this message, and I think I'm going to preach at least part of it, but there was something that I learned a ton. I've never been. I've done a lot of service work and missions and stuff like that, but I've never done a disaster response. And a lot of you guys were involved in the one that we just had here, which was kind of weird to be gone, to get this thing and have this thing going. And then the day we left, it's like, oh, we got a fire, and now we have our own disaster. We're in the midst of an actual disaster area. And how that changes things, and it changes the atmosphere, and different things happen. And anyway, I got to learn a ton about that, following some of the people on our team that were just had tons of experience. And what happens to generous people, kind people, loving people, what happens to them that is both good and then also can be challenging. And one of the things with disaster response, especially if it's in our own town like this was, is that we actually be so intent on doing good that we actually create a problem. And it's one of the things that that I realized that I wasn't even prepared for. And thinking like, we should do this or we should do that. And seeing, being exposed to more need than you can possibly meet. And the process of working through that. And I was sitting here thinking like, the difference between compassion and pity, the difference between, because what Fenton was talking about, compassion, like we need to constantly walk in compassion. When Jesus, there's amazing scriptures about Jesus walking through, not where his direction and his direction was actually shifted through compassion. And or that he was motivated and encouraged to respond from or out of compassion. He's being moved with compassion. And compassion is actually absolutely a necessity. But compassion, the difference between compassion and pity, sometimes can be really, it can be a real slight move, a slight adjustment. And pity actually positions us to be a victim, to actually, instead of being able to move and help with compassion, pity actually takes us down into victim mentality, and we can actually become part of the problem instead of a part of the solution, even though they can kind of come from the same place. And so as we are in the midst of this, our own local disaster, we need tons of compassion, what Fenton was talking about. But I want to encourage you that our town also needs bravery, strength. And as you pray and serve, because there's going to be tons of opportunities to serve and to serve from a place of compassion, because compassion yields strength and confidence. It lends courage. And pity actually can drag that and can actually take life away, can take resources away. And so just to kind of inventory where you're at and kind of get with. Anyway, it's just something laying on my heart that I learned a lot about. We got to follow an amazing leader, like I said, Carl, who you guys will meet, just amazing. We were driving, and then on this long drive from Spring to Rockport, we're getting online. Of course, people are posting from where they're at. We need help. They're here, and we need help. And we found this post that seemed pretty reputable, and it was talking about Rockport, which was where we were going. And they said, "Hey, we don't have enough drinking water, and we need Clorox. We need Clorox wipes." And had some of the things that they were listing. And so one of the gals in my truck had found this and kind of looked through it and was like, "Hey, those are things that we could buy, which we should bring, and we'd not show up empty-handed, that kind of thing." So we were like kind of motivated, and so she texted at the trucks, and we were like, "Hey, we should stop." So there's a Dollar General, and so we're still far enough away from the disaster that things were still open, people still had power. So we pull in, and we kind of just kind of, "Hey, let's do this." "No, okay, yeah." So we kind of all go in, and we're grabbing water, and we buy like, I don't know, 10 or 15 cases of water, and we go buy some Clorox wipes, and I forget what other little things. And Carl's kind of watching it all happen, and then he kind of like, "Hey, everybody, just kind of gather up." So he gathers us up, and we're excited and we're motivated, and we're wanting to help, like all good things. And he had got a hold of the post. I don't remember. I think it was Facebook, but got a hold of this post and had scrolled down 25 posts and actually read. Someone said, "We have more than enough. Please don't bring any more. We are." And so he had this moment where he just kind of taught us, like, hey, like good intentions aren't enough. They're just not. And good intentions, actually, we end up working against ourselves and keep. We are not. We're not suppliers. We're actually going there to do this. This is what we're focused on. Stay the course and stay in the lane. They were saying, stay in your lane. You have a lane that we are moving in, that we are, and we can get distracted. And it's good what you're doing, and it's okay to come, not come empty-handed. But anyway, it was an awesome leadership moment, and it was a great learning experience for me. So I just encourage you guys, stay in your lane. Like, identify, and the best thing is to go to the Lord and say, "What can I do? What can I do to help?" Don't just grab a hold of the first thing. Don't just, but actually, another story we heard. I'll tell you another story. And this is from Katrina. It's one of the first things that happened is that, and this is standard. One of the first things that people do is they want to give clothes. Like, people need clothes. People need clothes. But Katrina, after Katrina, and that was all, they had to, they had so much clothes that had been sent and brought and everything that they, the story is that they had a pile that was 20 feet tall and 100 yards by 100 yards. So basically two football fields next to each other, and 20 feet tall, that they had to burn all those clothes because there was nothing that they could do with them. And so, while our intentions sometimes are to help, our intentions are great, and we want to help, I would encourage you to wait till you're asked. Because maybe there is a need for clothes, maybe there is a need for water, maybe there is a need for whatever. There's going to be tons of needs, but to wait and position yourself to be ready when there's a call. Because sometimes we can cost a lot of time. We spent, with 10 of us, we were at the first place we went was actually a distribution center in Spring, Texas. And 10 of us, our team of 10, spent all day sorting clothes. The entire day. because they didn't realize it was only like 2 days worth that they had been taking stuff. And it took them 2 days to realize to say no to clothes. And in 2 days, they had enough clothes. They had these two rooms that were full of clothes that they couldn't use anymore because they were just totally packed with clothes. And so they're like, will you guys please help us? So we just sorted them out so they could give them away. But it took the time of 10 volunteers an entire day, and we could have been doing other things. Does that make sense? So like sometimes our great intentions they don't take us to the right place. And so anyway, one of the things that I learned, anyway, excited for the team to come and share with you guys, and it'll be great. So please be here next Sunday for that. We'll show you a bunch of pictures. We did not go to Houston. So, Houston is where the major flooding happened. And so we didn't go into that area. Houston and Beaumont, were affected by the flooding a lot more than the places that we went. So anyway, just to let you guys know, because I know a lot of people were asking how the flooding was, and I don't know. I didn't see it. So what you see on the news is about what I saw too. Do you want to come say something? Would now be okay? I know I'm just dropping this on you, but I feel like it's a good time.
I'm wearing two hats. One, my work hat, and then my member of this congregation hat. So I'm Liz Hamilton, for those that I don't know you personally. I work at Health and Human Services. And this last week, I've been spending my time organizing our recovery efforts for our local group that's been affected by Helena fire. So I want to say a big thank you to Mountain Chapel. So for you that might not know, we use this facility for several days to run a local assistance center, a LAC center, to serve as a one-stop place with state, local, and volunteer partners for anyone impacted by fires to come by and basically be served. So it was an amazing 12-hour response in a full house of some of the people that were here. Of course, our Red Cross, Salvation Army, DMV, Social Security. I have my list. There's a lot. Department of Insurance, the Contractor and Labor Board, our Veterans Service, Health and Human Services, Behavioral Health, our Clerk, Recorder, Assessor's Office, Human Response, our Sheriff's Office, and then our Office of Emergency Services, both at a local and state level. And then, surprise to us, we had National Guard here set up in the corner. So it was fun as they were flying drones because we lacked visibility and air support for so many days of the fire. And they were here flying drones to get any visual record that they could. So that was helpful. So that was going on. We served 55 households of the 72 that were homes lost. Thank you to Maggie, who coordinated child care. And then just for our Mountain Chapel body, you guys showed up to volunteer in a big way that meant a lot to my heart. So first, thank you, Cameron, for answering your phone. I didn't know he was in Texas, but he answered his phone and said, yes, whatever you guys need. So thank you. Call Dave. And then Dave answered his phone. So thank you for answering your phone and being here and helping me get this set up. Couldn't have done it without you. And then the first two faces I saw most days, Brendan and Denise, rock stars. Amazing. Yeah. Denise just kept this place going and moving, and she ran everywhere all day, making sure needs were met, and just amazing. Brendan probably got best spirit award. He made coffee for everyone, those volunteering and those impacted by the fire, that were coming in for service. He just had this great momentum about him that was just contagious and wonderful. And then my many volunteers who stayed the course with me, Stephanie Ambrose, not here, but Annie Steele, my mama, thank you. Bev Leader, we had Winnie Fisher, Linda Hymas, Trinity Kirk, and Colin and Allison Smith, all here through those days volunteering their time. And then on standby, we had Walt and Sharon and Garrett and Elizabeth Walgren's sister Fern, all available to answer their phones if called upon. So I just, with my professional hat on, thank you to this body for the response that you gave to everyone that was impacted by the fire. And then for my personal, I'm just overwhelmed and so grateful, just as a member of this congregation, to know that you guys rally and support this community in a really, really big way. So thank you. Final thing, a task that you guys can all do. And as we go through recovery efforts, those have begun, and those will go on for the next intensely several weeks and months with the cleanup and just helping people rebuild their lives and get everything that they need. Prayers appreciated for just open doors for people that continue to step up and help. Prayers and protection over environmental health. They're the ones leading the biggest tasks right now in cleanup, and just your thoughts and prayers with them.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, amazing. Sure. I don't really want to preach anyway.
I just want to also just, Liz, I said this to her, and she's like, oh, it's my job. And the same goes for Julie. Like, you guys are amazing. What you do for our community, and yes, it's your job, but thank you for your dedication. It is a thankless job most of the time. So thank you for serving our community so well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for loving and serving our community.
We are going to try to keep you guys informed on any volunteer stuff that is coming up. And please do the same for us. If you have really like a network and staying connected is the best thing we can do. When you hear about people that need help or anything like that, or they're struggling, whether it is just needing time to sit with somebody, talk, prayer, anything like that, please let us know. If it's physical stuff that they need, please let us know that as well. Like Liz said, 72 homes have burned, and so some insured, some not. Insured or not, there's going to be a process of rebuilding. It's going to be long, longer than it is short. And so people need things, and they need help. So please, get into your community. Talk to people. But then the other thing to remember is that there is, like we just experienced, amazing people that are running amazing programs to help people. There's a couple times, like we kind of had this process in when we were in Texas where we'd go to a home and we all had different things that we were doing, but for the most part we were cleaning up, we were helping to patch roofs. Because some rain was coming, those kind of things. Get people kind of set up to begin to launch towards rebuilding. And then we also had some people that were assigned to be pastors. Again, you're going to hear more about that too. And where their main purpose was just to connect with the homeowners that were there, the people that were there, and just to see if they need anything, to love on them and stuff like that. And there was at least once, maybe a couple times, when that was fully rejected, like where it didn't feel like it was they didn't feel successful. And we all had to remember that where our job ends and God's job begins, and that we are not people's saviors. We can't fix their problems, and that we can serve the best we can. We're gonna organize, and we're gonna mobilize, and we're gonna serve, and we're gonna help. We're gonna volunteer. We're gonna do all those things, but it's not our job to be their savior, and either you guys or us. And so it's our job to just love people really well. And I want to talk a little bit about a section of this, because I have a little bit of time, and so I can. But I'm going to make it kind of quick. But I think it applies to this and any situation. I was just starting to teach a 3-part series on communication. And so I'm going to pull just a section of today's, and I'll teach the rest of it later. But I want to talk about feelings.
Talk about feelings.
Because I think the more we understand our feelings, how we feel, and the feelings of others, the more we can actually effectively serve and connect and communicate. Really, what we're talking about is communication. And we talked about last 2 weeks ago how, you know, when Jesus was asked, what's the most important thing? What do we need to do to be saved? What's the most important commandment? He said to love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. So no matter, we know that love is the most important thing, but love has to be communicated. Right? It seems easy in a situation or in a time like this to, communicate love. When we were in Texas, we were communicating love by showing up and cleaning up. Trying to restore some sort of order in a completely chaotic moment. And it will be very similar in this situation. There's things we can't undo and we can't fix, but there's some practical ways that we can love people. Sometimes it's just a hug, and sometimes it's some prayer. Sometimes it's picking up literally the ashes. But what we talked about 2 weeks ago is how important we understand love to be, and how important it is to learn to communicate love. Because most of us probably have experienced one time or another where we try to communicate love, like there may be love in our heart, but it's not heard that way. It's not received that way. And we experienced that, like I was just saying, in Texas, where we came with love in our heart, but there wasn't, it wasn't received that way. It was just that person wasn't ready. And so a lot of that can be dealt with and talked through with developing our communication. And that's why we're kind of focusing on this. And specifically today, I just want to take a few minutes, and I want to talk about our feelings. Because people will almost always forget what you say, but they will almost always remember, at least for a while, how they felt when you said it. So they won't, most of the time we will even misquote what people said because we will be quoting from how we felt. So no matter if you say something maybe a little bit wrong, but your heart is right, and people hear, feel your heart in it, they'll actually quote you even better than the way that you said it, because they'll remember how they felt when you said whatever you said. And that's where they'll pull from when they try to say what it is that you tried to communicate. And so it's important that we know that about other people, and it's important that we know that about ourselves. Now, we obviously can't control what's happening inside someone else. We can only control what's happening and influence what's happening inside of us. But it's important to know that how much our feelings affect our communication. Whether we communicate, whether we send a message from how we feel, or we receive a message through how we feel, they always affect. So in this kind of situation, in a traumatic disaster relief situation, how we feel is going to be in everything that we say. And it's best that you just grab a hold of that and own it, Remember last 2 weeks ago we talked about ownership, how important owning our communication is. But in this, specifically talking about our feelings and how important it is to own our feelings, to own how we're feeling. If we're feeling overwhelmed, if we're feeling sad, if we're feeling out of control, if we're feeling, I mean, there's all kinds of feelings, but to recognize and to realize that you're going to communicate from that point. Feelings. They're possibly the most amazing, frustrating, wonderfully confusing, enjoyable, educational journey that we will take as God's creation, is to explore our feelings. Feelings can help or they can hinder the way we communicate. But we have to remember that ours and theirs, whoever they are, that our ability to feel is given to us by God, and that feelings are never the problem. This is a really big one. Feelings are never the problem. The way you feel is not the problem. What you do with those feelings, how those feelings manifest in your behavior, how they affect your communication, how they, where they take you, how you manage them, those can all become problems. But feeling itself is actually a gift from God. Now, we get ourselves into trouble sometimes because we blame our feelings for our behavior, or we blame other people's behavior on their feelings. And so we tend to think that if we just had less feelings, or if we just didn't have those feelings, things would be a lot easier. Now, that's not totally untrue. It's actually quite true that if you feel less, you possibly could react less. Unfortunately, that when we wall off our feelings to protect ourselves or to protect others or protect ourselves from others, we also wall off all the things we need to be healthy and happy. So when you block out, I don't want to feel sad, it's also very hard to feel love. Connection. Does that make sense? You guys with me? Our feelings are so important. They're part of the gift of being made in the image of a passionate God. You know, I can remember having conversations about people admitting, they would admit that God had feelings, but didn't want to admit that God had emotions. Right? Why? Because we're scared of emotions. Right? It's not, when you call someone emotional, it's usually not an encouraging sentence. Yet emotion is God-given. It's part of the way we were created in His image. We were created in the image of a passionate God. But we've been trained through our culture that emotions are dangerous. But it's not emotions that are dangerous. It's out-of-control people with emotions that are dangerous, that are scary. And so the problem is actually self-control. It's not emotion. And so we need to be able to begin to shift the way we think so we can create a free culture where people can actually, their feelings are valuable and listened to. And so that we change actually the culture and the way we handle people's feelings. It makes sense. Are you guys still with me? I know you're like, I don't want to come to church and hear about my feelings. Sorry, you're into it now. So here's some things to remember about feelings. If you like to write things down, I'm going to give you, we're going to go pretty quick, but I'm going to give you, I got 12 of them. So I know, over education here right now. But they're just 12 things to kind of remember about feelings that'll help keep you in the right place. Remember, we're talking about communication. It'll help remembering this about other people's feelings, remembering this about your own feelings. It'll help you stay positioned to communicate, which is sending and receiving. It'll help you stay in line with sending what you want to send, the message that you want to send, and also receiving the message that someone else is sending. So if you understand and keep these in mind, it will be helpful. The first one is that feelings are not the real or deepest you. Oftentimes we... especially in our culture, we feel like the way we feel is actually the most deepest and powerful part of who we are. But it's actually not true. Our feelings are, we can have deep feelings. That's not what I mean. It's not that feelings aren't deeply felt or very powerful, because they are. But actually, your feelings can shift and change in moments and a situation, and they're actually very subject to the weather even. And so if we rely so heavily on the depth of our feelings being our true us, you're attaching your identity to something that is actually influenced kind of by the wind, if that makes sense. It's actually our convictions that are more deeply us. It's what we decide to do and who we decide to be, no matter how we feel, which is actually the more deeper us. And if we can, it's where our core values are. This is actually how we see the world, and our feelings should be stacked on top of that. It doesn't make them less valuable. It just positions them in the place that's most healthy for you to communicate with the world and be who you are. Does that make sense? You can think about, you can judge, you can influence, you can enjoy, you can even ignore, and even choose to do other than you feel. But only if you believe that the way that you feel is not the truest and deepest you. It leads to a whole bunch of other things we're going to talk about. If you believe that the deepest part of who you are is how you feel, then when you're angry, you will not be able to control yourself. When you're sad, when you're grieving, you will lose control of who you are. You'll lose track of your identity. That makes sense. There's actually a deeper you than how you feel. All right, number two. If you value a person, if you value somebody, you must also value the depth of their feelings. Even if you don't like the way they feel, or understand the way they feel, or agree with the way they feel, valuing a person is valuing their feelings. Number three, remember, feelings are temporary. They're always changing. Don't make decisions that are permanent from feelings that are temporary, which we often do. Get ourselves into big trouble, don't we? Don't make permanent decisions from temporary feelings. Number four, it's not necessary or even likely for everyone to know or respond to your feelings like you want. It isn't necessary, which positions you for expectation. So disconnection happens. Disconnection in relationship happens when expectation is not met. That's how disconnection happens. So when you have an expectation that people respond, like when I'm feeling this, people need to respond this way. When we have a strong expectation for that, it's a recipe for disconnection. Does that make sense? Not necessary or likely for people to respond to your feelings like you want them to. It doesn't mean they won't, and it doesn't mean they can't. The closer in relationship you are with somebody, and the more you have, more time you have to explain to them what your expectations are, the better and more closely you can grow and stay connected through your feelings. Like when I feel this way, I need some time. Right? And I feel this way, I actually don't want any time. I need whatever the need is. Whatever the need is. We all have different... So a lot of that is self-awareness, right? But the point is that don't have an expectation that people will always treat you how you think you should be treated, or take care of your emotions the way you think they should be taken care of. Because it's not necessary, which means it's not... We're going to get to why it's not necessary, or the core value to understand why it's not necessary. But it's also not very likely. It's just not likely. And if that's an expectation you have for everyone that's in your close realm, in your close circle, you're going to find yourself with no friends. You're going to find yourself with no relationships and no connection. You still with me? Okay. You can choose your response, which you were talking about, self-control. This is number five. You can choose your response. And this is just a kind of an idea you can write down and get in your mind. But say the negative, but display the positive. Say the negative if you need to. Sometimes some of the negative things don't even need to be said. But say the negative. Say the negative feelings you're having. What you're doing makes me nervous. We're going to get into iMessage and how to communicate that. But that'll be later. But say things that are negative, but display things that are positive. Like, which is the whole next level. Take it to another level. Make sure that it's clearly communicated. You can choose how you respond. Powerful. All right, number six. Identify your emotions before you act. Self-awareness, knowing how you feel, is really important. So, basically, emotions and feelings are broken down into four categories. Glad, sad, mad, and afraid. So everything that you're feeling falls generally into those or a combination of those. A lot of times we will act angry when we're not angry at all. We're actually afraid. That's a common one. You know, sometimes we'll actually act glad when we're angry. Right? Because maybe we've learned that being angry isn't trustworthy, and so we don't want to let people know that we're upset, and so we'll turn up the glad knob, and we'll be acting like everything's fine, and we'll be smiling and happy and joking around and teasing and all those things, and actually we're quite angry inside. So identify, you need to know how you feel. Something I started a few years ago, and I encourage you all to do it, is in the morning or in the evening, whichever works best. Better in the morning because it sets you up for a good day, is to ask yourself how you're doing. Ask yourself how you're feeling. Especially during these crazy times. Like, how am I feeling? How am I feeling about what's going on? How am I feeling about, you know, my neighbor's home's burning down? How am I feeling about maybe not even having a home? How am I feeling? Am I feeling powerless? Am I feeling, actually, I'm feeling totally fine. I'm feeling glad that it wasn't me. I'm feeling like it was me. I'm feeling whatever the feeling is, identifying it, knowing it, and knowing that it will influence the way you communicate and care for people throughout that day. It's education that will serve you really well to know how you're feeling. Does that make sense? You guys still with me? Okay. Mad, sad, glad, and afraid. Number seven. You cannot grow in intimacy without feelings. This is what I was mentioning before. The wall you build to protect yourself from feelings, from feeling things or keeping things out, that keeps people from knowing really who you are, which is intimacy. Intimacy, I think it was Danny that coined the phrase, "Into me you see." It's the idea of actually opening up your heart. Without feeling, your feelings are actually a really important part of you. So if you block your feelings, if you protect your feelings or protect people from your feelings, you will never fully connect. People will never be able to fully connect with who you are or how you feel. And so it's really important to actually begin to... And you don't want to just... If you've been pent up all your feelings for a whole bunch of years, you don't want to just open the floodgates because everybody will run. There's a flood. Everybody run away. But you do need to start in a safe environment. Right? We talk about one of the things we do on the course is we create a safe environment, because in safety, you can have vulnerability, and in vulnerability, you can have intimacy and connection. So what we do is create safety. We even create some rules of being positive and how we interact with each other, because just simple boundaries create some safety that can create some vulnerability. So we actually intentionally do that so people can express how they're feeling. On a really simple one day with a whole bunch of strangers level, it still works. And so in your own relationships with people that you're seeing every day, it sometimes can take even more effort to keep those things open. And it also takes some confrontation, right? When you're not treated safely, when someone injures someone else's feelings or someone else's communication or behavior, injures your feelings, right? What do we want to do? We want to shut off. But when we shut off and we protect ourselves, so what happens a lot of times, or can happen, maybe has happened, or you guys have experienced it from one side or the other, Something happens at work, something happens wherever, outside, or vice versa. And you just kind of shut down. And then what happens? You go home and your kids are like, hey! And you're like, ah! Why? Because that what happened then carried into... So we have to be very specific or very intentional about opening ourselves back up. And sometimes we need time. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things we need in process to do that. But it's really important to realize that that we can't grow in intimacy without that connection. That was number 7. Number 8 is an important one. You do not have to treat people the way you're treated. I know it sounds really simple, but Jesus talked about this in Matthew 5. He talked about turning the other cheek. You cannot give your response, you cannot give your behavior to someone else's behavior. You can try, but it won't serve you well. And it won't serve well the people around you. A baby with hiccups down there. Does she have hiccups? It's cute. Where am I? Number 8. Yeah. Wait, number 8 still. I'm not quite done. Yeah, so Jesus explained and expressed the turn the other cheek, which is the idea that I'm actually in control of my behavior, no matter how I'm treated. So now, regardless to say that getting slapped in one cheek is not going to manifest a feeling of joy or safety or, you know, whatever. It's going to, you know, like, so it's not about feeling a certain way when you're attacked. It's about responding a certain way. And that response is going to be different than the way you feel. So when you feel attacked, betrayed, unsafe, all those things, I'm having these feelings that are happening, you do not have to act the way you feel. You don't have to respond the way that you are treated. That's a core value that should be at the forefront of your mind. That just because I'm treated poorly doesn't mean I will act poorly. That makes sense. Something to remember. Number 9. The truth may be hard, but does not have to be harsh. Proverbs 12:18 says, reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. You know, we're going to talk a little bit about confrontation, but in having healthy, you know, everybody's like, confrontation. But actually, confrontation is what creates a safe place. And understanding this reality that the truth can be really hard to hear. It can be really hard to receive the truth, and people either tell you the truth or you have to tell someone else the truth. It doesn't have to be harsh. You know, the words we choose, the way we communicate, we're talking about communication, the way we communicate has a lot to do with how we're feeling. And so just realizing that we're responsible for the way we say things. Not the way necessarily that they hear things, but the way that we say things we are responsible for. Number 10. And this is a key one through a whole bunch of stuff I've preached specifically on this number 10. But you are not a victim. Number 10 is you are not a victim. Telling yourself that it doesn't make a difference, that nobody listens to you, it doesn't matter what you communicate. It's self-protection. It's a self-protection thing that basically agrees with a victim mentality. That, and it's that, it doesn't matter, I don't care, whatever, they'll get over it, and I'll just, like, it's self-protection. It's like, we don't want to fail, and we have before, in that we bring our feelings to someone, and someone, steps on them, doesn't treat them like we want to. And we'll go back to that, like, I want to share my feelings, I want everybody to respond and be sorry and take care of me and protect me from that point on. That's just not the way it works. But if we don't do that, if we don't continue to force ourselves to be open, then we begin to close off and we begin to self-protect. And it keeps out all the good things as well as the bad things, like we talked about before. So don't partner with being a victim. 11. I know I'm going through these really quick, but I want to let you guys go. Just two more. Number 11. Crisis, pain, and loss are not optional. I know it's a tough one, but it's still true. Crisis, pain, and loss are not optional. We probably experienced that here in our community more this week than any other time. It became more obvious, but that's ongoing. It's not just on a mass scale, but even on a personal scale, that crisis and pain and loss are not optional. If you close yourself off to these emotions, you also limit your ability to experience love and peace and joy and connection. So you can avoid the way it feels when you drive down 299 and you see all these people standing in the ashes. You can avoid that feeling. We can learn to, you know, by a whole bunch of different ways. I mean, we can just try to ignore it and push it back. We can medicate it. We can do all kinds of things to try not to feel that. But if you shut that off in your life, if you shut off pain and crisis and loss and going through those emotions, you also will limit the experience of joy and love and peace in your life. So I know we've hit this one from a couple different angles, but it really is important to experience both your negative and positive emotions. Because if you block out all the negative ones, it blocks out the positive ones as well. It turns them off. All right, number one. Number 12. Number one. Let's start over. No. Number 12. Last one. You can affect, and this is a really huge one too, you can affect and change the way you feel. With minimal effort. Sometimes more. But really, if we put some effort into it, we can actually affect and change the way we feel. And I'll give you just a couple ideas. Number one is just don't give up. Keep sharing how you're feeling. Because being understood, even if it's partially understood, will change the way you feel. You know, not feeling understood, not feeling like people know you, not feeling like at least somebody knows you, even with the Lord. Like coming before the Lord and just, I need to be understood. God, I need you to understand me. And airing all that stuff out. So it's like, it's just a simple aspect of just don't give up. Don't give up. Keep sharing. The second thing in here is get it in your mind that you can entertain a new perspective or belief. You know, it's okay to say I didn't think about it that way. How many times do we or people we're trying to connect with get stuck in that place of refusing to see it the way that you see it? And it's refusal. It's just this, bam, you run into a wall. And so the feelings we get jammed up, we get stuck. And so to change the way you feel, to affect and influence the way you feel, grab a hold of that. That different perspective, different belief, different angle. Another way you can do that is through prayer and time with the Lord. Our feelings are part of us, and as part of us are constantly being sanctified, are constantly being purified. We know the verse, 2 Corinthians 5, says, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, is a new creation, the old has gone, the new has come. That includes our feelings, our emotions. Take your emotions to the Lord, and some of our feelings can be connected and attached to lies that we're believing. Sometimes it's just a simple truth, revelation that God takes you to in the Word or in prayer or whatever. And all of a sudden, I mean, how many of you guys have ever gone into prayer feeling one way and come out feeling another? I mean, it's totally normal. It's a total normal part of prayer to enter in to time with the Lord, feeling hopeless, and come out feeling even a little bit more hope. So it's quite normal. It's quite expected. And yet we still sometimes wallow in hopelessness for too long. Does that make sense? It doesn't fix all the problems, but it does influence and affect the way we feel. And another one is just really practical, but along the same lines of just reflecting through journaling, writing, poetry, whatever it is that you do. Just taking time for yourself, going on a hike or getting time away or whatever it is that you do, have a plan to influence and affect your emotions. If you're feeling overwhelmed, if you're feeling out of control, if you're feeling whatever it is. And it can be simple. It could be complex. It could be a hobby. It could be, it doesn't matter what it is. As long as it's this way that you influence and affect the way that you feel. For me, something really simple that I do, when I just am tired and my feeling, I just like, you know, you're just at the end of the day, you're all ground out and I'm feeling done. I watch TV because I don't have to use my brain. I don't have to decide anything. On TV, the world just goes on, and I watch kind of shows that work out in the end, and like, look at all that, all worked out, and I didn't do anything but sit on my couch. You know? And for whatever reason, it changes the way I feel. If I had a hard day, I can watch a couple TV shows, and I feel like I could sleep. It just takes me out of that thing. And so while it's simple and maybe even just kind of silly, it works. So recognizing, like, what is it that helps me? What is it that influences and affects the way I feel? And maybe more importantly, just that number 12, that I can actually do that. I can change the way I feel. I can change the way that I don't have to feel this strong for longer than a few minutes, for longer than a few hours. Like, I can influence. What do I do? How do I do this? Maybe it's your friends. I need to go out and hang out with people that are positive and that aren't in this with me. And so there's a whole bunch of ways, but does that make sense? So I'm going to end with that. I know it's kind of, I just took a chunk out of this, but next week I'm going to bring that team, the team of 10. I think they're all going to be here. Just an amazing group of people that I got to get to connect with on for Texas. And then also I've had a couple people ask, how do we get involved? What can we do? Like, this is really, seems really neat. And a lot of that will be coming to you guys. But we're going to be doing it. There's trainings that you can go to if you want to get involved sooner than later. But eventually but Bethel Global Response is actually writing some curriculum and stuff to begin to train churches. And so that could be as much as a year away, but that hopefully will be happening also. So there's a lot of ways you can kind of just be involved and stuff, and I'll be continuing to bring those things to you. I would encourage you guys, if you're on Facebook, check out Bethel Global Response. If not, you can go to BethelGlobalResponse.com, and I think there's some stuff there too, and you can check that out too. But anyway, those are all those things, and you can just ask me if you want. But they have more answers than I will have for you, so that's probably what I'll tell you anyway. Will you guys stand up with me? I want to pray again just for, we are winding to the end of the end of the disaster, but not near the end of the disaster response. And we are still in full disaster response mode. We are in full, we are in a disaster area, meaning that you see things that you wouldn't normally see. You'll experience things that you wouldn't normally experience. There's, you know, 72 different families without homes. Some of them not even being able to go back yet. So that's all happening. And I know it might seem simple to talk about our feelings on a day like this, but it's really key and important. That I believe that God's going to take us into opportunities in our community, whether they're, we've already had a ton of them, but, you know, moments or divine opportunities to encourage and love on people. And knowing where you are, knowing where your emotions are, knowing where your feelings are, being lined up with what God's perspective is, will position you to communicate exactly what's on God's heart and what's on your heart. And so just kind of read through all that stuff and get with the Lord, and let's all just kind of be a blessing to our community. Just one person at a time, and continue to be a blessing to our community. So I just want to pray, and then we'll let you go. Lord, we just thank you again for your goodness. We thank you for, in the midst of all this stuff that's going on, we choose and we see that you are good. You're good in all of the generosity and the the goodness of people and just the way you take care of us and love on us. And there's good things coming, even for those that seemingly have lost everything. There's good things coming for them. We know that you're a good father and that you give good gifts and that you have a plan to take care of them, to prosper them and not to harm them. And so, Lord, we just step into that, even that which we don't understand, that that you are good, and we choose to stand in that place. And Lord, I just pray for divine encounters, that you would position us to love on and to bless our community, those people that have lost so much, and also those people, like we were talking about earlier, that have come so far to help us. Lord, that you'd position us to sow into them, to bless them, to love on them, and to encourage them. And you'd give us just great ideas, and you'd give us encouraging thoughts for them. And again, we just thank you, Lord, that you got good things in store for Weaverville and for Junction City and all the surrounding area. We partner with that belief system that you're good. We thank you. Amen.